Consequence Podcast Network.
Clint.
What?
You said you had a question for us?
I did. Hey, guys, so I had a question about the Golden Girls theme song. Does it seem a little needy to you, the lyrics? Because think about it. If you threw a party, invited everyone you knew, you would see the biggest gift is for me. And the card attached would say, thank you for being a friend. I feel like the song is a little bit humble braggy.
I think that proves that the song is definitely sung by Blanche.
Yeah.
That is like a Blanche thing, right?
Yeah, perhaps. Not enough references to men specifically, but...
Well, it's like she's trying to pay compliments, but the only compliment she can pay is, well, your heart is true, you're a pal and a confidant, it's just too bad you're so ugly, right? Like,
and she is a bit of a size queen, so she would make sense that it would be the biggest gift, you know?
My problem, somewhere in my brain, at some point over the years, someone crossed the wires, like hardwired in my head in opposite. Every time someone says to me, the Golden Girls theme song, my head goes, if you're out on the road, feeling lonely,
I don't even know what
and
show
so
that is. What is,
cold,
what
show is? Gilmore Girls.
Oh,
all you have to do is call my name and I'll be there on the next train.
You're doing a pretty good vocal impression of Carole King's daughter right there.
Yeah? Good.
Yeah.
I will follow.
Man, anywhere. It's good that I'm representing Rosen Island. I don't know anything.
That seems like a good place to say, welcome to TV Party. Joined by two very special guests today, one returning, one for the first time. Say hi to everybody, Chris.
Hey.
That is Chris Vire. He is a theater critic and roundabout gadfly of all things culture. I don't know. Is that a thing to
sure?
say?
Sure.
I'm going to put that on my next batch of business cards.
Good. By the way, those business cards are very stylish. I am pretty jealous. Does it really come with a place where you can write your phone number so that you can give out your business card without having your phone number on it?
No, I just whited that out to Instagram because I don't need the stalkers.
No, of course.
Nice.
Chris, where can people find your byline?
Currently, I am writing for the Chicago Sun-Times, Chicago Magazine, American Theater Magazine, and all kinds of other places soon to come, let's hope.
Great. Amazing. Wonderful. We are also joined by Mr. Joshua Davis.
Well,
now,
hello.
I am going to give two introductions because there's one that's the official one, and there's one that's the actual reason you're here. So here's the official one. Joshua Davis is the executive director of the Illinois Arts Council.
It's true.
That means that every once in a while he's like, hey, First Lady of Illinois.
Yeah. I just had dinner with her, actually.
It's
weird.
It's weird.
Very strange. I don't know how my life has made this turn, but it is what it is. So here I am. Mm.
So he has this amazing fancy job. He is also a person I've known for like 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is that really true? Let's see. 18? Now I'm not going to say how old I am. So I don't know. It's been 3 years. It's been three wonderful years.
3 years.
There's another Blanche
met
joke,
in
guys.
Yeah.
I'm killing it. We met in preschool. Josh and I went to college together and way back in the day used to run a theater company together.
That is true.
And have said, well, we should just talk about this on the lanai many times in our lives.
Yes.
Which makes him the perfect guest. As is Chris for a show focused on the Golden Girls, which I'm so excited about. Clint and I were having a conversation. We were like, oh, God, what should we talk about? I mean, there's like new TV.
But it's also such a bummer.
Fuck it, Golden Girls.
Yeah.
And that was the conversation. And he was like, yes!
Let's make it happen.
That I'm sure I just popped in your ear. I don't care. That's how I feel.
That's fine.
We are going to start, as we always do, by talking about some news of the week. When I started making our little episode outline this week, there were like two news items.
Yeah.
And then Thursday and Friday happened, and now it's one of the biggest TV weeks of the year, news-wise.
Yeah.
So we're just going to talk about a few of the things. We'll start with the littlest one. How many of you fellas have read Good Omens?
I sure have.
I read half of it.
Yeah, same.
I actually just read it last month.
Really?
Well, I
reread it.
I reread it. Yeah,
sure.
I've read it in the past. So.
Yeah. Well, Amazon is doing a Good Omens series.
Mm-hmm.
It's David Tennant and Michael Sheen. Mm-hmm. One and a half people I'd like to lick. I don't know. I guess Michael Sheen, maybe.
Sure.
He's not really my type.
Depending on the role.
I absolutely like to lick Michael Sheen. I think
like Wesley Snipes, Michael Shannon?
Sheen.
Or Sheen?
No, I don't want to lick Michael Shannon.
Fine. Yeah. I mean, you don't know where he's been. Wesley Snipes, Michael Sheen, or Tron Legacy, Michael Sheen?
I was thinking Masters of Sex, Michael Sheen.
Oh, okay.
However, David Tennant.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe that's the one and a half. Uh-huh. Anyway. However, they just announced a new piece. That cast is great all around. Like, there are a bunch of really, really good people in it. I'm very excited for this series. But they announced that Frances McDormand is going to be the voice of God.
Nice. But who is she playing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But who is she playing?
So that's Metatron, right?
Yeah. Yes. Oh, God. I'm so excited. I think it's such good, smart, weird casting.
Mm-hmm.
Another short thing. We finally have a title for the next season of American Horror Story. It's just, at this point, American Horror Story The Inevitable, because it's called American Horror Story Apocalypse. And it is the, as we've talked about before on the show, the crossover season between Cult and, not Cult, Coven and Murder House. So we still don't really know much about it, but there's a hand that looks like it's in latex. It's very Murder House-y. And it's like tickling a baby that's like a demon baby.
Okay.
Have you seen this image?
I've seen it. Like a blood baby.
It's
good. It's like a provocative image.
I think it's cool. I'm excited.
AHS is usually pretty good about those like nice little visual image teasers.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm excited about this one. Sarah Paulson was also excited about this one while she was at San Diego Comic Con being announced as the star of the next M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah.
Very strange.
Glass.
The president of Paramount TV was fired. Amy Powell was fired. Paramount is keeping it under wraps exactly what happened. But The Hollywood Reporter announces that the CEO of Paramount, Jim Giannopoulos, outlined multiple individuals who, quote, raised concerns and comments made by the executive in a professional setting, which they believed were inconsistent with Viacom's values. According to sources, the comments included racially charged language.
Oh, boy.
So, I guess, bye.
It's a week for that.
Yeah. And to be clear, the president of Paramount TV is like the Paramount TV studio. So it's not the Paramount Network. It's not like the network that thought Heathers was a great idea and then decided it wasn't twice.
Not the home of Lip Sync Battle.
Yeah, not the home of Lip Sync Battle. But instead, the company that produces Girl Code, Catch 22, some upcoming Netflix series, 13 Reasons Why.
13 Reasons Why.
Yeah. The new series starring Emma Stone and Jonah Hill called Maniac, and Amazon's Jack Ryan. So, which also cast Noomi Rapace this week, which I'm excited about.
Oh, okay, cool.
So Amy Powell got fired. Here is the thing. Like, don't be racist. And if you are racist, sit down with somebody who can tell you how to be less obviously racist and then like work on yourself. Yeah. I feel like that's a thing that everybody should do.
Absolutely.
The big news of the week, announced just yesterday, we're recording on Saturday, is that we are getting a Buffy reboot. Yay. It's been rumored for about a year. Apparently, conversations have also been ongoing for about a year. Joss Whedon is set to executive produce. He will also be the showrunner of a new series over at HBO, so presumably won't have a ton of time for the new Buffy, which is maybe not the worst thing. Yeah. And Monica Breen, who's a writer on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., she wrote for Alias, Brothers and Sisters, Revolution, Midnight Texas, a bunch of other things, is going to be acting as showrunner. And Buffy is going to be black.
Which I'm here for. I mean, me too. You know, and it sounds like
more for more representation.
There are
some
good things in line for this, but I just don't understand why we need it. Why do we have to poop on everything that's wonderful? I feel like there is a tendency to redo things that don't need to be redone, and then it's just absolutely the worst.
Yeah.
And I think if you're going to do that for something like this, something that's so precious to me.
do you consider it a personal slight?
Yeah, it's like a backhand across my face.
Yeah.
To
Whedon, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like leaving Buffy out of it sort of for the moment, like I'm just feeling a real sense of like reboot and revival fatigue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
and there are ones that work, but it's just there are so many.
There are so many, like, yeah, so many of these corporations just trying to recycle their intellectual property and like ignite some spark of nostalgia and I'm kind of excited about frankly seeing like new Murphy Brown, but I'm kind of also terrified of it.
Yeah.
Just like I feel like
we're a little too far away from Murphy Brown, or maybe I'm just slightly too young for Murphy Brown. I'm intrigued to see how that one's going to go over.
Yeah. With Buffy, though, I kind of feel like it might work better to, like, I haven't read a lot about what is in store, and they actually haven't said much about what is in store.
No, they've said almost nothing.
Mm-hmm. But I think maybe rather than a reboot, a sequel would be better.
That's kind of what I think.
Well, the sequels actually exist. We have a whole comic book series. Right. So they already have a story in place. Yeah.
But like a Buffyverse, you know, which already exists. So if there's a new series in that world.
Yeah, just let the existing canon exist.
Yeah. But, I mean, on the other hand.
We'll wait and see.
We'll see. That was an interesting piece of news to write up, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, oh, I bet.
Man, the conversation about Joss Whedon has changed a lot in the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot to fit in. And then the last thing we're going to talk about, it's not TV news, but we just have to. Mm. Cats. Which one of you made that sound? Was it you?
I meowed, yes. Yeah. My fiance is looking at Pet Finder now to potentially try to convince me to get a cat. That's what I have to contribute to this conversation.
Well, whatever you do, don't let her look at Pet Finder to get you to listen to the score for Cats, because it's boring.
It is so boring. That was my first Broadway musical that I ever saw.
Oh,
and
boy.
It just killed me.
You know, when I was in fifth grade, I thought Cats was genius because I was a fifth grader, and that's about what it's aimed at, which is fine, except for you can do more charming musicals for children. I don't understand who was clamoring for Cats. And and more importantly, who is like, Taylor
Swift, absolutely.
Oh, my God, Tay-Tay.
You're going to have so much fun. I have no idea. Because you'd assume that it would be...
I'm going to assume it's all Deuteronomy. So.
Well, that's in line with what I was going to say, which is I will be interested if one thing happens. Like, then I'm there opening day. Take my money.
Oh, no, I'm going to be there opening day.
Ian McKellen is playing Grisabella. Then, like... If Ian McKellen gets in full cat drag and sings Memory, I am on board.
I mean,
I will wait for the YouTube clip.
It could happen. It won't.
We're absolutely going to get drunk off terrible margaritas and then go see that opening
Yes.
night.
Oh, totally. Oh, if I go to a press screening, you're coming with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I assume Jennifer Hudson is playing Grisabella.
She's got to. I mean,
but she's too young.
She's too young.
Well, in fairness, this was just pointed out to me by somebody on Facebook, but Jennifer Hudson is like 37 now. Betty Buckley, when she played Grisabella in the original cast of Cats on Broadway, was 35.
Oh.
Well, there you go.
Well, then Betty Buckley was too young, too. But that's
fair point.
But that is a fair point. And
I mean,
whatever.
We're all just assuming that Jennifer Hudson is playing that role, though, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess she could be playing whichever cat sings McCavity, because that's a fun little, sexy little song.
Oh, yeah.
But
Cats
she's
about?
Oscar winner Jennifer Hudson, and she won an Oscar for singing the other song that's not Memory that everybody knows from music theater, right? Like the other great ballad. So then we just need to wait. Well, apparently 6 years, because she's just going to play older than she is forever. And then she can do Sunset Boulevard and she'll just like ding, ding, ding. She'll hit all three. I don't know why that was NBC.
NBC,
but,
well.
Those are your three, though? Dreamgirls, Cats, and Sunset Boulevard?
No, ballads.
Oh,
and I'm
ballads.
Telling you,
okay.
I'm not going as if we never
no,
said
I
goodbye.
No, I got that. It's just a funny three musicals to pull.
No, well, I'm specifically thinking about the songs.
Yes.
Like, man, if I'm allowed to put Jennifer Hudson in any musical I want, first of all, we're getting a really interesting Sound of Music. I can't wait. Right? Just imagine. The Hills Are Alive. Just alive.
So what do we think the style of this movie is going to be, though? Because we've acknowledged that there is no plot to Cats.
The style would be just
the musical styling, the musical staging is very much like leotards and makeup. It's very 1982.
Yeah.
The director of the film attached is Tom Hooper, best known for his tonsil cinematography in Les Mis. So,
at least they haven't announced Russell Crowe yet.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Russell Crowe is playing McCavity. I can smell it already.
I love it. How many close ups of cat butts are we going to get?
Oh, my God.
Not Here's enough. What I want. I want him to just outright steal that Chris, who. Directed the Sweeney Todd revival with Patty in it.
John Doyle.
Okay. So I want them in a mental institution and they all just think they're cats.
Oh.
And then they like play instruments, and that's why Taylor is there. They all play instruments, but they're suffering from a mutual group delusion that they are cats.
You're actually winning me over.
I mean, I think it's an interesting idea, but
Tom Hooper,
it's
call me.
Still,
yeah. Fuck Golden Girls. This is what we're talking about now.
Oh, yeah. Totally. There would have to be a subplot where one of them has realized they're not really cats and is trying to use the show as a distraction so that they can escape from the mental hospital.
Grizzly.
There we go.
Yes, totally. And then she gets caught and she's like, oh no, this is for my big song.
Midnight. It's turning a little sucker punchy.
Sort of.
The world within a world kind of thing.
It's like Cats meets Sucker Punch meets One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah.
Meets, now, see, that is a movie I would see.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, I'm going to go see this one.
But. Yes, you absolutely are. Anyway.
Just bring your biggest box of wine.
Yeah. That was a lot of movie talk for a TV podcast, but I stand by all of it.
Yes. I'm also excited for a new Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When does that start up?
This fall sometime,
October,
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. The trailer looked great.
I watched the little clip of her walking out at SDCC and got a little...
I got a little choked up,
choked
too.
Choked up.
Yeah.
People were screaming. She had her sonic screwdriver and was just holding it like a badass, and I just...
Yeah.
Are you a Doctor Who person?
I'm not.
That does not surprise me. Anyway, let's talk about our picks for episode of the week so we can get on to the main event.
Let's do it.
Chris.
Yeah,
you go
Chris,
first.
You do it.
I got very confused because I was supposed to ask me what I watched this week, and then like my brain short-circuited, and then I thought I was a cat, and I was in a mental institution, and it was very confusing. Well, Chris, what is the best thing, new or old, that you watched this week?
Well, mine is not new. I have been doing a lot of rewatching of Parks and Rec this past couple of weeks, which, frankly, I'm never not rewatching Parks and Rec. It's just kind of on a constant loop in the background in our house. But last week, my boyfriend and I went on a road trip, and one of the things we chose to listen to on the road trip was the audiobook version of Amy Poehler's book, Yes, Please.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, and highly recommended that you listen to the audiobook version because it almost seems like she wrote her book with the audiobook in mind. She has lots of guest stars on. She does some really just fun stuff. And one of the chapters in the audiobook is Amy Poehler and Parks and Rec creator Mike Schur talking about the show. And they interpolate some clips and they talked a lot about the episode Leslie and Ben, which is Ben and Leslie's wedding, which for some reason I had seen it. I don't rewatch it as often as I watch the April and Andy's wedding episode, for instance. But I went back specifically to Ben and Leslie's wedding as part of the dozens of episodes that we've watched in the last couple of weeks. And just the loveliest encapsulation of all of those characters. I think it's in like season 5.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're several seasons in by that point. And I love that they kind of did the fake out where the wedding was supposed to be 3 months later, and you kind of assume in the episodes leading up that, like, if you're watching it in real time, oh, it's going to be the season finale, and then they sneak it in. I looked it up; it was during February sweeps, but still, they sneak it in as Ben and Leslie deciding to get married, kind of on the spot, and everybody else in the crew comes together to make it happen, and great moments with all of those characters, Ron and Donna and Tom. And it's my new favorite thing
now. It's one of the better uses of jam, too. Because I keep thinking, here comes the boo, all dressed in boo.
It is the episode where Councilman Jam gets punched out by Ron Swanson, which is just a delight all kinds of levels.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are one of the most lovely TV couples in all of history, I think. And I think you can't watch that show without falling in love with Adam Scott a little bit.
Mm. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's very adorable.
I love that episode. The first time I watched it, I do this thing where I will save bits or long chunks of TV shows I love for myself for years down the road. I can't do that anymore, unfortunately. It's like one of the things that is not a luxury I can afford any longer because I make money not off this podcast, but off other things. So I saved like 2.5 seasons of Parks and Rec for years. So I saw Leslie and Ben for the first time last year, and watched it with my partner. And at the end of it, he was like, that was cute. And he looked over at me and I was just sobbing.
Oh, sure.
Just like tears streaming down my face. And for about 3 minutes, I thought to myself, this means we're not compatible. This is never going to work. How on earth can he be like, that was fine, and I'm so deeply affected, he must not really love me. And I went and sat in the bathroom and cried for 45 seconds. Then I was like, you're such a Pisces. And then went back to like my life. But it's a damn good episode.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Good choice.
Yes. Josh, what is your pick for the week?
Well, I am a bit of a reality television whore. I can't help it. And so the only thing that I really have time to watch right now is So You Think You Can Dance. I think it's me and maybe five other people in this country that's still watching that show. But I adore it. I love it so much. And this was supposed to be the final Academy episode. And if you're a RuPaul's Drag Race watcher, Miss Laganja Estranja somehow weaseled her way onto the show. It's so confusing because her audition was fine, but they put her through very reluctantly. And then, you know, I'm not sure how familiar the rest of you are with the show, but while they're in Academy, they'll do different types, like they'll do hip hop and ballroom and so forth. And she was just sneaking through on each one. And I think it was because they were like, oh, yeah, here's a drag queen and she's super popular. And I mean, she can dance pretty well, but these are dancers,
right?
You know, so she got all the way till the very end with contemporary. And they finally let her go. So, unfortunately, wow. Miss Laganja Estranja will not be in the top 20 for So You Think You Can Dance, which was a bit of a bummer, but also the correct choice.
You know what I want? I want Miss Alyssa Edwards to be on, I know, So You, right? Think You Can Dance.
Well, Miss Alyssa Edwards, perfect television.
Yeah.
I mean, reality television gold.
Yeah.
So she should be on absolutely every episode of reality television that's available.
Yeah, because Laganja is like a... like cringe comedy, not comedy, just cringe.
Well, I mean, I actually love her. I think she's fantastic, but everything she does, there's a little bit of desperation.
Yeah, totally.
And it's like this uncomfortable desperation.
Yeah, I mean, I find her to be a very empathetic reality TV character. Like, I really feel for her, but oh my God, I feel very attacked. It's like maybe the best RuPaul's Drag Race, most useful RuPaul's Drag Race gif of all the RuPaul's Drag Race gifs. Mm-hmm. It's really high up there. That Michelle Visage going, no! Also very useful. But I think that was maybe too Laganja. So
I actually used the Latrice Royale no gif quite often. You know, that one where she just, no.
Yep, that's a good one.
That's my favorite.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Laganja.
Laganja Estranja. Yeah, so RIP. Didn't make it to the top 20.
One of our other frequent contributors, Kate Kulczyk, took us on the journey of the first half of Laganja's time on So You Think You Can Dance. So anybody, it's great. Anybody who wants to know how Laganja did but isn't watching the show now has the full story.
Yeah.
This is great. Good. That's great.
A complete catalog.
God, unless there's not ever a thing. Totally. Exactly.
Yeah.
There's not a thing where they bring people back unexpectedly, is there?
Oh, God, I hope not. But I mean, you never know. They definitely had a good kind of conversation between her and Nigel. It was building a really wonderful story where he wasn't sure and she was trying to make him come, you know, over to the dark side.
Well, sorry, Laganja.
Yeah, sorry, Laganja.
Mm-hmm. Mrs.
We love
Estranja.
You dearly.
And Kate said they couldn't call her Laganja, so they called her Miss Estranja.
Miss Estranja, huh. Yeah.
I wonder what that's about.
Weed.
Laganja. Ganja.
Network to
gotcha. Oh, that was lackluster. There we go.
There you go.
Who has the best tongue pop at the table? It's not me.
Oh. I don't know.
No.
Chris is the winner so far.
Chris wins.
Yeah, definitely Chris. Okay. Clint, what was your pick?
I'll talk really, really quick. We'll tease a little bit about the Pose finale because we'll talk about it in greater depth next week. But I have seen the Pose finale ahead of time because I'm a fancy TV critic and I'll be writing a finale piece up on Consequence of Sound probably by the time this episode goes up. Yeah, it's just a wonderful culmination of everything the show has been up to this season. It's a big, sunny Ryan Murphy finale where like more things get wrapped up than maybe you'd expect in very, very nice, positive ways. And also would really wonderful function as a series finale had they not been picked up for a season two, which is great news. So that was great, but also more importantly, my week has been weirdly spent when it's not been watching Golden Girls, watching ABC's Match Game remake with Alec Baldwin. which is a fascinating watch. I've just sort of been like surrendering to garbage television this week.
And so we watched. I'm here for that though.
Oh, it's fun. It's fun because I feel like when you think about who is today's Richard Dawson, it's probably Alec Baldwin. Because he also has this perpetual undercurrent of I'm too good for this, which actually helps the humor a little bit. Where he's just kind of perpetually fed up with the contestants and the panel celebrity judges. We have like a couple really wonderful highlights, including Jack McBrayer. A lot of 30 Rock castmates end up there. Jack McBrayer is on there a lot, and I feel like he's kind of the Paul Lind of the group. And then also Adam Pally shows up, and if you saw him present, I don't remember what awards ceremony it was.
The Webby Awards.
Yeah, the Webbies. Right? Yeah. He's in perpetual Webbies mode, where he'll be like, well, that was a horrible answer, but I chose this, and it's a weird kind of anti-comedy that works for that particular format, and they lean into the 70s-ness of it. It's dumb garbage fun. And so that was sort of my highlight of the week.
I sort of want to watch it now.
Third season's on Hulu.
I like never in a million years would have thought I would want to watch that.
I didn't think so either. But Julia started watching it, and then I got wrapped up in it.
Speaking of RuPaul's Drag Race, have you in your brief Clint watched this season was his first season.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you.
So.
Oh, and Rue is a panalist in one episode of Last
Game
as well.
Oh, duh. Well, that, of course. Of course.
Yeah.
I would put money on the fact that Match Game is back because Snatch Game is so successful on the show.
Probably.
I think that has to be a factor.
Yeah. And also, Caroline Ray is a very frequent and wonderful panelist.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Anyway, yes, you're.
Have you in your, like, burgeoning Drag Race fandom stumbled across Ben De La Creme's impression of Paul Lind yet?
No, it's
you
not coming
have
to mind.
It to is, find
yeah.
it.
Incredible.
Insane.
Yeah. So
good. Nice. Insane.
Well, I have that to look forward to now.
Yeah, it's so good. Well, anyway.
Ben De La Creme is actually my secret boyfriend and my favorite contestant of all time from RuPaul's Drag Race.
Good.
So definitely check him out. And also his Dame Maggie Smith on Snatch.
Oh. I saw the Dame Maggie Smith. That's great. Yeah.
Citrus!
Citrus! Allison, what are your picks?
I picked the first two episodes of Trial and Error, which are, I think they both aired on NBC. They're definitely both on Hulu. But this was the first week for Trial and Error. It's the second season. You absolutely do not have to have seen the first season to follow what's going on. I can say that with authority because I have not seen the first season of Trial and Error. It's another office style mockumentary, but in this case it's true crime mockumentary where a defense attorney has arrived in the town of Peck, South Carolina. The residents are Peckers. If I'm just going to open a little window to you into what the humor on this show is like.
Got it. I'm getting a sense. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The format of the series is that every year there's a new defendant. It's this defense attorney and his team, they defend people in this teeny tiny town where outsiders are not welcome. Sherry Shepherd is one of the people on his team. Part of the gimmick with her seems to be that every week she has a different, completely random condition. And my introduction to her is that she has a disorder that makes it so when she's scared, she jumps really high. And it's just a sight gag, but he startles her and it's from behind and you see this body just shoot it to the ceiling. I laughed so hard. And the second one, it's spontaneous combustion syndrome where her arm will just start smoking. It's really good. Anyway, the first season, the defendant was John Lithgow, who was innocent because the person he was supposed to have murdered was actually killed by an owl. And this season, it's Kristen Chenoweth, who is the first lady of Peck, South Carolina. I think it's like Lavinia something hyphen Peck, and she at one point they're trying to build a timeline. The second episode is called The Timeline. It's the suitcase and the timeline. The second episode is called The Timeline. So they're trying to date whether or not she would have had time to hit a man in the face with a clock, and they can tell what time it happened because of the clock.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. But also there's East Peck time and West Peck time, so they don't know. Depends who owned the clock. Whether there would have been time for her to hit the man, sing her solo at the party, and then drag his body in a suitcase to the Peck River to drown him. And so she says, okay, well, let's find out. So she starts singing her solo, and then it says cut to 25 minutes later, and she's in verse two. And it's so good. It's sort of that perfect kind of dumb fun where it's really dumb, but it's incredibly well executed. It's maybe my favorite thing I've seen Kristen Chenoweth do in quite a while, and I really liked her on American Gods, but she's just demented. It's delicious. It's so funny. Jamie Mays is also in it. It's surprisingly dirty. It's operating in sort of that Michael Schur method where everything is so sweet and nice that you don't notice that some of the jokes are pretty filthy. And also part of the through line is a podcaster shows up for M-Town, the murder podcast, to follow the trial. So I'm really enjoying it. And based on this conversation, it seems like y'all are sort of in the mood for stuff like that. So I highly endorse the second season of Trial and Error.
This sounds like extremely my jam.
Yes, I'm having so much fun. But that's... gag of her just shooting it to the ceiling.
Like, I'm picturing it now, and it's already
I watched it three times. I just rewound it and watched it again and rewound it and watched it again. It was just great.
Sounds like kind of like Zucker in the 70s level humor, which sounds really my jam. But before we get into the our main subject for tonight, we Allison and I have a little bit of business to attend to. Our Bachelorette haikus.
Yeah.
Who should
Speaking
go first?
Of dumb TV, but of the wrong kind. I'll go first.
Sure.
I worked really hard on this one.
Yeah.
This is tiresome. Not a bachelorette gal. Blah something virgin.
Yeah, I feel
that
like
pretty
this,
much sums up my feelings.
That we really decided, we're like, oh, this is gonna be fun, and then like it's just sort of we're just crawling toward the end.
The
of
best
point.
Thing I can say about The Bachelorette is it is the only thing I watch on TV where I know for sure I can multitask and not miss anything.
Oh. Same here.
Yeah. I will not be returning. What's your haiku?
Poor virgin Colton, unseated by Tia's thirst, only three remain.
Oh, you put in so much more work than I did.
Because the Colton, like, they're down to four, and then, like, basically based on one conversation that, like, one of her friends or, like, a former bachelorette or something, I forget what her circle of friends is, like, they were together but then, like, stopped to do the show. And it was just like a weird bit of like, can I talk to you for a second for the sake of drama? And it worked.
Apparently they're both going to be on Bachelorette or Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh,
I'm done. I will see this through to the end.
I don't care.
My favorite thing about the show is how you can all tell that they've watched it a lot because they speak this bachelorette lingo that I don't speak. Like, they'll say, like, well, you know, 2 weeks from now is hometowns. And I'm like, what the fuck is hometowns?
Right. I thought
what
I was losing my mind.
Yeah, I'm... Do but either of you watch The Bachelorette?
No.
Yeah, but there we go. Yeah,
but we can say we tried, and now we're like, I'm not interested
not
in watching romantic relationships treated like coupon collecting.
Sampled the wares, and I found them not to my taste.
I want a refund, please.
Does it just feel like that's gone on for about 10 years too long?
Yeah.
It just feels gross. It feels gross and samey.
It's really, it's really strange.
Even though I don't hate The Bachelorette, like... She's like peak bachelorette, but like I don't care.
She seems very charming.
Right.
She seems to genuinely believe that she can fall in love with a person she meets on television. Oh. And
well, even after she's literally been burned by that once before.
Yeah. You do you.
Yeah.
Can you see yourself being engaged in 2 weeks to one of the four men that you're dating in front of television cameras? Yes, I can. And you totally believe her?
The one thing I ask of you is for you guys to be honest with me on the television show in front of fucking cameras.
In front of cameras. Mm. And then they met all their families who were all like, this is a great idea. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Let's get into the main event.
Let's do it.
Clint.
What's up, pals? What's up, confidants?
Tell the fine people what we're about to do.
We're about to do a Hall of Faces, which is something specific to us, where we take a different TV show or franchise or category or whatever, and basically take a character from that particular show and debate which of our characters belong in our vaunted Hall of Faces, our pantheon of the great television characters of all time. We've had like Ted Danson. I haven't even kept track of both the
characters
from the Americans.
In this relatively young podcast, so far our inductees have been Michael from The Good Place.
Mm-hmm.
Are you Good Place people?
Oh my yes. God, yes.
Mm-hmm. Just making sure. It's also extremely your jam, so I assume.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We inducted Kilgrave from the Marvel television universe,
mm-hmm.
The villain from Jessica Jones,
mm-hmm.
David Tennant.
Yeah, David Tennant.
I didn't argue for him. That wasn't me.
Yeah. You didn't have to.
No, I didn't have to. Someone else, you know, rang that bell. We were trying to elect someone from the Americans and did a sort of in case of emergency break glass thing that I now kind of regret.
Yeah.
Because we've already done the, well, fuck it, let's just pick three of them thing once.
Yeah.
And now we arrive at the Golden Girls having already used that trick.
Genie's out of the bottle.
Which is not great. So we inducted Elizabeth and Philip Jennings and Martha from the Americans. Are either of you Americans watchers? No.
Again,
they're good
full
picks.
Rosen Island.
Well,
spent,
back in St. Olaf.
I'm about to go on a very expensive work trip, and yet I spent, I think it was $48 after shipping, buying an outfit. I'm covering my face right now. Buying an outfit that Allison Wright, who plays Martha, wore on The Americans. I bought screen-worn clothing. It specifically bought an outfit that, not that I can fit because she's this big, but whatever. It comes with a little certificate and it has her like costume tag where it writes, it happens to be from, I didn't know this, from my favorite episode of The Americans to Android's Dream of, no, sorry, to Mail Robot's Dream of Electric Sheep. But it comes with an apron and that's why I got it. So I can use the apron and just keep the clothes like in their little bag, whatever. Anyway, but now
so
we're about
wonderful.
To elect a character from the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
I feel like maybe we should have saved that. Fuck it. Let's just elect three of
for
them
this.
For this.
Three? Try all four.
I know.
It's going to be a difficult decision.
I know.
It's going to be so hard.
Yeah.
So I think normally what we would do, and we'll still technically take this format, is we would have like a spirited debate about who it should be. And then we would have another spirited debate about whether or not they actually belong.
Yeah.
But I think in this case, it's pretty obvious that like all four of these characters belong in any TV character Hall of Fame, all four of them.
Right.
So it's just a matter of which one is going to get in first.
Yeah. This is if you had to pick one, who would it be? Situation.
Because there's no point in our, we're not going to be like, well, does really belong
right.
in a TV character?
It's That's, really right. her show.
Like
it's
that was
true.
that was a worthy debate when we talked about the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
It, because The Good Place is so young, it was a worthy debate when we talked about The Good Place. The Americans, it was more of a given. But with those first two, it was like, it was right to have
yeah.
that conversation. But Golden Girls has been off the air for a long damn time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they just announced figurines. Josh, what was the company?
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Tell me about
NECA
that.
At San Diego Comic-Con just released images of the Golden Girls action figures. And they have cloth clothing and they look like linebackers because they really went in on the shoulder pads.
Yeah.
And I love them.
They're very cute. But yes, they look like they could knock you down.
Oh, yes.
Like really hard,
especially Bea Arthur.
Yeah.
Oh, well, she also looks like Ursula.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, hey, here's a thing I should say. If you're in Chicago and are listening to this on Monday, which is the day it comes out, and you're not doing anything tonight, Monday, you should come to the Music Box Lounge where I am not directing a staged reading of the screenplay and score for The Little Mermaid in which Joshua Davis is playing Ursula the Sea Witch.
This is true.
Lovely.
I'm so excited.
I am so excited.
Anyway.
I did just buy a huge black and purple tutu
of
for the occasion.
Of course.
Which I'm very excited about.
Naturally.
So. For you. Mm-hmm. Good for you.
Very excited about that. Anyway.
Yeah, the Golden Girls.
So it's
Golden
still in the cult. What I'm saying is it's been off the air for a long time. It's still
its legacy is
the like
assured.
Cultural conversation.
Yeah.
Most gay bars that I go into have some Golden Girls paraphernalia somewhere. Do you remember the Glenwood used to have those? They had pictures of the three who had died up on like their mantle. Do you remember that? Well,
remember
it was
that.
Two, and then Rue McClanahan died, and then it was three, and it's still three. Thank God.
Bless you.
Hold on.
Let me check on her, make sure she's okay.
I literally, this morning when I was catching up on episodes, I paused mid-episode. I'm like, I have to make sure that Betty White's still okay.
PBS is airing a tribute to Betty White this fall, like a long look at her career. And we're doing a panel. We're getting a panel on it at the TCA.
That's,
and I'm really hoping she shows.
Oh my God, that'd be dope.
I know. Probably won't because, you know.
Yeah. But by all accounts, 96 years young. She's still in, she prides herself on having good health, great faculties, still working at 96.
Well, she had a huge resurgence. It was that Snickers commercial
that
launched her. And then also that campaign to get her on SNL.
Yeah.
Hot in Cleveland.
Hot in Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, and she's Betty fucking
she's
White.
Just great.
She
yeah.
can curse like a sailor.
I still think of that 30 Rock episode.
Yeah, that was, I was just about to say. Do you remember that 30 Rock episode? Where she was so mad that she was getting a call about the rule of threes.
I will bury you. It's so great.
So, point being, there's still, they obviously all belong. So now this is a conversation about who gets in first.
So there's no wrong answer. We're just deciding who gets in on first.
Who's
ballot.
The rightest?
So in this, basically what I'm saying is once we decide who it is, the part where we would normally debate whether or not they belong, we're just going to be like, yep, it's official, let's go home.
Exactly.
So why don't we all say who it is that we're voting for? Clint, who is your nominee?
All right. Well, I will pick the person who wasn't initially part of the main cast when they were first pitching the show. Estelle Getty's Sophia Petrillo, an actress who is younger than Bea Arthur and yet played her mother because they aged her up with like a wig and some makeup and stuff. But
3 hours
still
of makeup.
3 hours of makeup.
3 hours for every episode?
Yep.
Yeah. She was dedicated, and she was apparently, according to reports, like, she was always really intimidated by working with like such screen legends and working next to Bea Arthur. Like, she was always sort of amazed that she was even there. I think Sophia sometimes gets overlooked in conversations about the Golden Girls because she's not part of the main three. She's Dorothy's mother. She's much more of like the walk-in joke machine that like she doesn't get as many chances comparatively to get like full storylines, but I think when you do they really really land even harder because you don't expect them out of her. And I just think she's as acerbic as Dorothy is. I just really think, you know, she got it from somewhere, and Sophia is the master of just the brutal acid-tongued takedown, just an old Sicilian broad who knows exactly what she wants. And yeah, it's just, I'm in love with that performance as much as you can be, you know, prefer one over the other, but that's why we're here. And yeah, Sophia Petrillo, I love her to death.
Very good. Josh, who do you have?
Well, I'm going to go with my spirit animal, the national treasure, Rose Nyland, Miss Betty White, which we've already talked about. I mean, she is absolutely incredible. I also think that she plays a really important role on this television in that she's representing white middle America, frankly. Which
so which, marginalized. So underserved.
Well, no.
I didn't know you wrote for the New York Times.
Well, no, but I mean, I think that that is an important take on everything that's happening, because they dealt with some really tough subject matters, and showing that even these kind of individuals in this setting can have a very specific take on those experiences, I think was really kind of innovative at the time, and it was saying really wonderful things about the country, and I think she represents kind of hope and love and naivete and all these really wonderful traits a person can have that is charming and delightful. And I just always want to give her a big hug.
Yep.
So I am sticking with her.
Good choice. Mr. Chris Fire, who's your pick?
I am here to represent the brains of the operation, queen of cutting rejoinders, substitute English teacher extraordinaire, and
bartender of the Mos Eisley Cantina.
Dorothy's Bornak, as played by the great Bea Arthur. And this is not about the character, but I do just have to say, in terms of Bea Arthur, one of my first trips to Sidetrack, the gay bar here in Chicago.
Yeah, we're not there when she was there.
I was there when Bea Arthur was here doing her solo show back around 2002. Yeah, she arrived at Showtunes Night at Sidetrack. They played the clip of her and Angela Lansbury doing Bosom Buddies, and then Bea Arthur climbed up on top of the bar to accept her worship. It was amazing.
Oh my God.
You should see our faces. Yeah.
So Chris wins. Okay. Thank you for listening.
I love Bea Arthur. She's one of the best things that ever happened. But yes, I am here for Dorothy Zbornak.
It's a really good call.
Yeah. Allison, how's about you?
I am representing just the sluttiest Southern belle, sluttiest septuagenarian Southern belle in state sistery. I got Miss Blanche Devereaux.
Oh, you're making me all a flush.
Played by Rue McClanahan, a character who got called a slut basically every episode and was cool with that label 90% of the time. Mm. However, when she wasn't, when it was not in her mind earned, she never accepted it. She never let people say, like, oh, well, obviously you did this because you are such a tramp. She would stand up for herself and say no, and that's unfair, and that's disrespectful, and it's mean-spirited, and I will not accept it. And I just fucking love that every time it happens. Mm-hmm. She also, part of the reason I love Blanche is because she did a lot of personal growing over the show.
Mm. Yeah.
She had to learn to accept all kinds of shit and get past a lot of her biases and a lot of really backward thinking. We'll talk about the episode where her sort of long lost daughter comes home as part of this episode. She also realized that she was not totally comfortable with her brother being gay when he came out, and it took her a while to totally come to terms with that. She got very judgy when her dad was marrying a younger woman, and she eventually came to terms with that. First, she was judgy because he wanted to be a country music singer. She had to come to terms with that. She can be very judgmental and sometimes mean-spirited, but is always ready to do some soul-searching. And whenever she's confronted with something that challenges her worldview, either her view of herself, her view of other people, she examines it. And I think as a result, a lot of the more progressive episodes of the Golden Girls tend to center on her, not exclusively, but a lot of the like issue episodes end up being Blanche episodes. Also, she's just so fucking funny. Jesus, do you remember the episode where it's the one where they're in Florida and they end up, they're on vacation, sorry. Because I actually think maybe they're in the Bahamas or something, but they're staying in a hotel, but they don't have room for them. And it turns out it's like a hotel that's known for having prostitutes. And they're sleeping in the lobby. I might be confusing vacation episodes. Regardless, she starts having a vocal out loud sex dream. And everyone is just staring at her. And it's extremely funny. There's an episode I watched recently where she starts talking about how you just need to imagine yourself on a mountain to cool off because it's really hot, and then you're with a ski instructor and there's a roaring fire and there, and then all of a sudden it's 120 degrees and I just fucking love it.
Yeah, no one shimmies her shoulders quite like Rue McClanahan.
There's that great, and all three of them are great in this, but there's that great episode where the like big time soap opera actor comes to Miami to do the community theater, and they all want to bone him, and then he ends up dating literally everybody in the show. But she does her audition with giant balloons in her boobs, and then they get crushed. It's just great. Anyway, nice. I am all for Blanche, who owns her sexuality and is sometimes kind of a dick, but sure does do a lot of thinking about herself.
Lovely.
Both terms.
Yes, excellent. Well, now that we've picked our characters, it's probably time for a little break, and then we can actually debate said characters. We'll head out on the lanai and grab a glass of orange juice and maybe a slice of cheesecake or
some
two.
Some lemonade. Yeah. What flavor? Chocolate.
Chocolate.
All right, I'm going to ask a really tough question because I feel like we might just be able to easily narrow here before we even do any debating. Oh, if you're searching your truest self and you're voting for one person,
oh God,
who are you voting for? Clint?
Rose.
Josh?
Rose.
Chris?
Rose.
Oh my God, me too! Okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Okay, that's TV party. Okay, well, so that actually totally backfired because I just thought maybe we'd be able to eliminate one.
No.
Right? Like if one of us turned.
Well, because I thought that what maybe one thing we could do is because we made in the creation of this list and the starting of discussions, we figured out great episodes from each character to talk about. So maybe we could go around and say like one or two really good talk about one or two really good episodes from each character.
Yeah, I think that's great. And then who knows, maybe one of us will change our mind. But our first tally would in any other situation actually just end.
So let's continue to play the game.
Yeah, we will see if it changes. I'm going to pull up our emails with these lists right now. Clint,
TV party,
why don't you go first? Just tell us what you picked and then pick one, maybe two that you want to talk about. And we all tried to rewatch, if not all, most of these.
Yes. Well, so I picked a couple three Sophia episodes because one overarching thing that appealed to me about Sophia is that especially the appeal of Golden Girls as a whole is treating old age like a second adolescence. So like these characters get to sort of feel young again, especially with Blanche being, you know, so sexually active, and then like Rose is so naive and everything. But Sophia is for me, the character who gets to make them feel young, because she's the one actually dealing with the really, really serious, interesting end of life issues. Mm-hmm. And so a couple episodes I centered in on were season 3's Old Friends, where she spends
that one gets me.
It's so devastating.
It's yeah. So rough.
Where she befriends a man sitting on the bench in the boardwalk, and they sort of strike up a bit of a friendship, but he seems a little confused sometimes, and you find out near the end of the episode that he has Alzheimer's, and it's something that she sort of knew, but she was also just sort of thinking about, you know, her old age and considering how lucky she feels she has it, having all of her own faculties and sort of, but also just wanting to have a friend in that stage of her life. And then another one I really liked was season 5's Not Another Monday, which dealt with an old friend of hers who out of the blue asks her to be with her when she decides to commit assisted suicide. And it dealt with issues of quality of life and the notion that, you know, you live long enough, and I guess this is an issue that both episodes bring up. You always think when you're young, you want to live as long as possible, but there are, you know, aches and pains and medical conditions and losing everyone else you've loved at that stage in your life. And
well, at that time of the, or yeah, around that time back in the 80s, they were really having a big conversation about that, because that was Dr. Kevorkian. That was the whole assisted suicide time. So the fact that they touched on it, I thought was really, mm-hmm. really
exactly. But I think the one I'll pick as a last minute choice, which was season 4, episode 2, The Days and Nights of Sophia Petrillo, mm-hmm. which was unexpected. I did not expect this to hit me as hard as it did.
Is this the one where
she volunteers at a hospital?
Oh, no, I don't. I thought it was the one where she buys
the nectarine.
Okay, good. Yes.
So, yes,
okay.
It's the same one. And so it's great because she gets her own subplot, but also it keeps cutting back to the other girls who think that because she's so old, all she has to look forward to every day is to go out to walk to the market and buy a nectarine. But it turns out that nectarine has so much greater meaning, especially, you know, allowing her to get into all these different kinds of adventures in her own way that the girls don't even know about and they don't need to know about, because that's her life, it's her journey. And then especially near the end, that like gut-wrenching scene with the little boy that she spends time with every day, basically, and especially this show coming out in the late 80s, early 90s at the height of the AIDS crisis, and like this little boy basically effectively doomed because of when, you know, he contracted the disease and how, and then the significance that nectarine has and the way she brushes it off as being insignificant, as just another part of her nature. It allowed what is normally a joke machine of a character to have so much more going on under the surface. Mm-hmm. And it was so unexpected and so surprising. And that's my favorite Sophia episode. Hmm.
That is a really, really good one. Mm-hmm. I love all of your picks. The one that really struck me, though, was Old Friends for two reasons. One, I knew immediately, I was like, oh, okay, he has Alzheimer's. But, you know, the first time I watched it, I remember being really surprised by that. And I mean, part of that is my own personal experience. But I think we've come a really long way in the way that we talk about that particular illness. Because, man, it was I was like, oh, okay, well, that's immediately recognizable. He has Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. But her last line of that episode, when she tells the guy that he can't sit on that bench, blah, kick right to the gut. That is also the episode that earned Estelle Getty her Emmy for this series. She won for that episode in season 3. They were all nominated multiple times. The most nominations was Betty White, but they were all nominated multiple times.
And everyone did win one, right?
Yes, everybody won one.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and especially that episode is sort of brought into greater relief, you know, watching it from the context of today, too, considering, you know, poor Estelle Getty, the way that her health deteriorated later in life. She was dealing with very similar things. She was dealing with Lewy body dementia, which takes on the characteristics of that and Parkinson's. So it was just heartbreaking. So just seeing that from the context of that made it hit home even harder.
I also love any episode where Sophia gets really mad at people who are mean to Dorothy, because she spends a lot of time being like casually cruel to basically all of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In like a lovable way. I mean, in a sitcom way.
Well, if that was somebody, an apologetic way too. Yes. They talk about it because of her stroke. She can basically say whatever she wants to say. Uh-huh. But I love it.
Yeah. But anytime she gets real mad at Stan in particular, I want you guys to know when we did The Good Place, we didn't plan. This is why we plan in advance who's going to talk about what. We didn't plan in advance who was going to talk about what. So we go around the table, and I think Clint, you picked Michael.
Yeah.
And Julie was on that episode. Julie Starbird was on that that episode, and she picked Janet. Caroline Sita was on that episode, and she picked Chidi. And then I absolutely panicked and said Mindy St. Clair. Which it made the conversation really fun. Because I think The Good Place is the kind of show where you could eventually have a conversation about little side characters like that being really cool and interesting and important. Mm-hmm. But man, if we hadn't planned this, I might have gone, Stan Zbornak.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going back to old friends, though, before you go off that, I do want to say, just to lighten that episode a little bit, that's also the episode, I believe, where Rose's teddy bear gets kidnapped.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is so brilliant. And that last moment when she pushes that kid out the door and says, life's not fair.
Oh that's so beautiful.
Yeah, well, television
maybe
gold.
Maybe that's a good transition then. Why don't you talk about some favorite Rose episodes?
Well played, Josh.
Yeah.
There are seven seasons.
Just like bringing everybody over to my side.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you know, being a gay man myself, I actually gravitated towards a lot of the gay-centric episodes that surround Rose.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, obviously, is from season two, Isn't It Romantic? It's when Dorothy's friend Jean arrives, who is a lesbian and her partner has just died. She's been having a hard time moving on with her life until she meets Rose, and the two of them kind of start this really wonderful friendship, and we slowly realize that Jean's falling in love with Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that I love this episode so much is because Rose actually, you know, we talked about her being a representation of white middle America. Her response to that was so incredible because it wasn't ashamed. It wasn't angry. It was almost this lovely consideration. And she said, I believe I don't understand these kind of feelings, but if I were like you, I would be flattered and proud.
Mm-hmm.
Like that statement alone, I think, is just so powerful.
I think right after that, she says something to the effect of, if being just friends isn't enough, I understand.
I understand. Yeah. Oh, it's just so beautiful.
Oh, I just got a little.
I know.
It's so dusty in this suite. need to clean more.
I'm sorry. You caught me off guard.
You need to hide. Oh, God. Did any of you get to the housekeeper episode where they all think where? So they hire a black woman to be their housekeeper, and then they become convinced that she is
she's stealing things.
No, that she set curses.
I do not remember that episode.
And it ends up like it redeems itself in the end because it's just that they're all like three racist white ladies, and really she like gave them perfume and was covering for the fact that she hadn't swept under the bed because she was studying for a nursing exam at night and shit. Uh-huh. But oh my God. They all become convinced that she's cursed them. I was like, oh, God. Oh.
No, the only curse episode I remember is when Sophia puts the Sicilian
the
curse. Oh, God, that's great.
So it turns out the wife was doing it all.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Really take that, good. Terrible. This show is wonderfully terrible to terrible.
Anyway.
The next episode that I want to talk about is actually one that has stuck with me for years and years and years, and that is from season 5, and that is 72 Hours. And that is the episode where Rose got a blood transfusion about 6 years ago. Hospital reaches out to her and they tell her that she might be HIV positive, which is a pretty, I think, daring thing for a TV show at that time to actually tackle. And Blanche, this is actually a shout out to Blanche, has another great line in this where she says something along the lines of, you know, AIDS isn't a bad person disease.
Right.
Yeah. Which is one of those lines that the gay community has really, you know, latched onto. And I just love it so much. It's also, they bring up the idea of how people's perception of AIDS is so incorrect because Sophia won't drink out of Rose's cup at that time. So it was tackling some really, really heavy things. And it's just an important episode.
Yeah, from the perspective of 2018 to look back and think, this was on network TV 30 years ago.
Yeah, at a time when like the president wouldn't acknowledge it, you know.
Yeah. At a time when like, you know, we were debating like Ryan White and who probably is an analog for the character in The Days and Nights of Sophia Petrillo.
Yeah.
The boy in the hospital. Yeah.
Well, and rewatching this, you know, I was surprised how much still rings true.
Yeah.
Dorothy has this whole speech about why don't we teach our kids about sex? And I was like, yeah, seriously, how is it 2018? We still haven't come, you know, round to that kind of thinking. Which
this isn't a Rose-centric episode, but I had a similar reaction to... God, I don't think you picked this one, Chris, so I don't think I'm stepping on your thunder, but I'm going to check just in case.
Are you talking about Dorothy's favorite people?
No, oh. I'm talking about Dorothy has a student who she enters in an essay. Mario Lopez.
No, that's... Well, that's
that
Mario
is it? Lopez. That's okay, that is it? Okay. And she enters him in an essay contest, and he wins, and then he gets deported.
Because he's undocumented.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's...
I was like, holy shit!
Yeah.
Oh my God!
Which, funny enough, that just happened, actually, with the Poetry Out Loud contest. Do you know that contest?
No.
That happened nationally. A kid in Maine won the state contest for Poetry Out Loud, and then they had to do a whole restraining order on the NEA because of the possibility of him and his family being deported.
Oh, my God.
It was a mess. It's crazy that stuff is still happening.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the show is... I was surprised, too, like, coming across episodes. Like, there's a Blanche one that'll come up later, probably, that reminded me of, like, oh, this is stuff we're talking about right now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, and then my last one that I want to talk about... there's some other ones that we're going to talk about that I think are great stories for Rose as well. But the last one that I think is worth mentioning is actually High Anxiety. Uh-huh. And that's from season 4, and that is where it comes out that Rose has been addicted to painkillers for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And you got to take into consideration, this is the height of whole Nancy Reagan DARE program. So a lot of television shows were talking about... drug addiction, like if you look at, you know, Saved by the Bell, Jesse Spano, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But they actually did it in a really fantastic way. Mm-hmm. They talked about her needing treatment. It was something she couldn't do on her own. The way the girls stayed up with her all night. It actually, I think it was the first introduction of the Guggen Spritzer, which is the St. Olaf version of Monopoly.
Yes.
All you have to do is buy one road and you win because they
the
only had
road
one road.
In St. Olaf.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But again, I just think that that is an incredible episode. And mm-hmm. watching her deal with that and the change in the personality that she has is pretty terrifying. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
that's also the one with the subplot about the pizza commercial.
Pizza commercial, yeah.
Which is also great.
I remember that episode vividly. Oh, like from when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that the show has in common with a very modern sitcom that feels old-fashioned, but in a very updated way, one day at a time, where there's so many episodes of The Golden Girls that, you know, you'd think they would be very special episodes, but they don't feel like that. It's so refreshing, yeah.
Chris, what mm-hmm. did you pick?
I want to start actually by saying one I didn't pick, because we are talking about a lot of the kind of issue episodes here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're right, I didn't pick the one with young Mario Lopez, even though that, I think that's a really good one. But so Dorothy's big issue episode, actually a two-parter, Sick and Tired, which is where she's going to doctor after doctor to try and get diagnosed for her just general kind of downness and
Arthurness.
And all the doctors are just dismissing her and kind of gaslighting her, and eventually she finds someone who correctly diagnoses her with chronic fatigue syndrome. And I remember that two-parter very well. I think I don't know if she actually submitted that for the Emmys that year, but it feels very much like an Emmys play. But that I really don't like that that pair of episodes very well. It feels very mawkish to me. And I also feel like it's a rare misstep in that this show is constantly introducing siblings and children and boyfriends who we then never hear about again, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Rose's pain pill addiction we never really hear about again. But chronic fatigue syndrome, y'all, chronic is in the name. And for the show to go another 3 seasons after that and it's never mentioned again, I feel like... I know, like, sitcoms were not as serialized 30 years ago as they are now, but, like, that's just one where looking back from 2018,
J.J. Abrams joint,
from the perspective of, like, a post-Lost World, it's just like, what? No. So, just had to get that in there. But the episode that I did kind of focus in on from season 3, My Brother, My Father.
That's her Emmy episode.
That is the episode that she did win the Emmy for. This is the one where
I love this one.
Sophia's so brother Angelo, who is a priest, is coming for a visit, and so Sophia begs Dorothy and Stan to pretend to still be married for Angelo's benefit. It's a great Stanley's Bornak episode, it's just got a lot of great Dorothy, like, kind of character defining moments. I think this is in season three, so it's like still fairly early-ish. And then, of course, the kicker is that Angelo is not actually a priest. He's been pretending for decades.
It's the young pope.
And another of my favorites is actually super late. It's right near the end of the final season. Season 7, episode 19, Journey to the Center of Attention.
Is that what it's called? The flannel season?
The final season.
I heard flannel. I'm like, I know it takes place in the early 90s, but you don't have to call it the flannel season.
No, this is the one where...
love Nirvana's guest spot.
Blanche takes Dorothy out to her favorite... singles bar, and there's a very specific Cheers reference in this episode too, which we can leave aside, but like no we're not leaving aside. Blanche walks in and gets the very Norm Blanche treatment, and then she plays on one of George Wendt's most famous lines from Cheers as Norm, where he says, "It's a dog eat dog world and I'm wearing milkbone underpants." Blanche says, "It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I'm wearing no underpants." It's so specific, and I love it so much. But Dorothy ends up making friends with the pianist and singing and taking all of the attention away from Blanche. It's a great episode, actually, for both of those characters. Mm-hmm. I know, Allison, you and I talked about that a little bit. Another season three episode, Dorothy's New Friend. This is the one that centers on
that bitch Barbara Thorndike.
Cheers. Let's drink. Yeah. No, this is Dorothy makes this friend who is an author and who seems very worldly, very high class,
cosmopolitan.
Very cosmopolitan. And Dorothy is so excited to have this like new intellectual friend, and she treats Rose and Blanche poorly because she's so excited about this new friend who is a bitch.
She's one of
everyone else in the house.
Liberal elites.
Yeah, well, liberal arguably. Like, yeah, what, yeah. The denouement is that Barbara wants to take Dorothy to her country club, but I believe it's Sophia's date can't come because, well, he's Jewish, isn't he? Mm-hmm. And then you get really great B. Arthur, Dorothy having kind of a Julia Sugarbaker moment, frankly.
Totally.
Of telling off this awful woman. Mm-hmm. It's super, super satisfying.
I don't remember the exact quote, but I know it ends with "Go to hell."
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And then the live studio audience cheers. It's
yes,
great.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. And then the last one I'll mention for Dorothy right now is season four episode Valentine's Day. This is one of the many like flashback episodes. I love this show because they occasionally did like the traditional clip show where they're just like, the writers are tired. Let's just set up a framework and like work in some clips from actual past episodes. But Golden Girls often did this where they would flash back to like just like scenes that we hadn't seen before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you get a lot of, frankly, flashbacks to Sophia and Sal when
she didn't have to put on the wig.
Estelle Getty, without makeup, and you get
in Chicago,
and you get young Dorothy, played by
the St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Yeah, young Dorothy. I think most of the time is played by a terrific actress. I think her name is Len Green, who is just like gets all of those. I've been researching, Josh.
He prepared for this episode,
but no, she just gets all of like Bea Arthur's mannerisms down so right. And her like vocal, I love it so much. But so
there's
this
also
episode,
the one where then her mother comes over
and
her mother is played by Bea Arthur. Oh, it's so good.
Yes, also good. But the flashback in this Valentine's Day episode that I really put it on the list for is when
Rose and Blanche and Dorothy are getting set to go on a Valentine's Day cruise, and they're at the drugstore just picking up some sundries and travel size items.
Bric-a-brac.
And Blanche suggests that they might want to get some protection, and Rose looks at everything on the shelf except
Perpetual Space Cadet.
Oh, it's so good. And until Dorothy just says, "Condoms, Rose, condoms, condoms, condoms," and it's like the most gifable moment.
Yeah, and even in that vignette, speaking of Sugar Baker moments, Blanche gets a very good one. And in that scene,
that's
which
true.
Is pretty great, but made even better by the other two girls' reaction, which is just I don't know her skedaddle. Yeah. And the nude resort vignette is also really fun. You know, we've been talking a lot about the issue episodes of this show, but the episodes where they go into broad comedy are just as good.
Totally.
Yeah.
We'll save that for the end. Okay. There are lots of lovely Blanche episodes. The one I want to talk about first is one of my favorites, which is the premiere of season 2, End of the Curse, which is Rue McClanahan's Emmy episode, which is when Blanche finds out she's going through menopause, and she's so shocked because she's just in her 40s. And, and at the same time, the subplot is that they're breeding minks
for
fur coats
in the
garage.
Yeah.
Wow.
And somewhat they can't figure out why the minks won't bone, because they need to bone for them to make money. So they have like a mink expert come over, and he's like, "Oh, they're too old." So then Blanche refuses to let them get rid of the minks, because what does that say about her? And then it turns out that they're not, A, they're not too old, and B, they're also gay. So all the minks are having sex with each other and not reproducing. But it's just great. I think that Rue McClanahan is especially great when Blanche is both confronting her own aging in a funny way, but it's also coming from a place of real anxiety and insecurity. Mm-hmm. That also comes up in an episode I didn't pick, I don't think.
I'll say real quick, I love that both Golden Girls and Parks and Rec have season 2 premieres that involve gay animals.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. There's another episode where Blanche meets a man in a bar, a very charming, dapper man in a bar, and then leaves, having already left him her phone number, and then he asks the bartender for his cane because he's blind. And it does that typical Golden Girls thing where they just can't stop putting their feet in their mouths. It reminds me of the episode where Rose is dating a little person, and Blanche goes on this whole speech about how Rose must have just hired this guy to teach him a lesson, and she talks and talks and laughs and laughs and no one's laughing, and then goes, "I wish I was dead." So good. But she can't stop making these jokes about, like inadvertent jokes about blindness. And then finally has a conversation with him about how she wants to get back together and have another try, but she doesn't know why he would like her, because most people like her because she's beautiful. And it's one of those, it's just really grounded and emotional and thoughtful. And The End of the Curse is like that. I also want to talk about Blanche's Little Girl, which is upsetting.
Yes.
That episode
makes me so angry.
Upsetting. As a part of Blanche's arc, it's really important because you start getting hints in the first season that she has a lot of regrets about being a parent. She feels like she failed her children. She sometimes mentions wanting a do-over. That'll also come up in season 2, episode 16. And then there was one, which is when a baby gets left behind at a marathon because someone didn't pass on a message that there was a family emergency or something, which is still nuts. What the fuck?
Yeah.
But they end up with this baby and they think they're going to adopt it. And it leads to Blanche making this phone call to one of her other daughters, trying to make up and like start over with that. Same thing happens when her grandson comes to visit and she has to like be a parent for a while. But Blanche's daughter comes home. They had a falling out because her daughter wanted to go to Paris and be a model. Blanche didn't want her to do that. So they don't speak for years. And she says, "I'm coming to visit. I want to see you." And so she comes to Florida. And the door opens and she's put on a lot of weight. So on the one hand, this episode is upsetting because it is nonstop fat jokes.
Well, it just hasn't aged well. And that's usually not the case for the Golden Girls.
And here's the thing, the abusive boyfriend...
which is the point I want to get to.
Sorry, yes.
Which is what makes this episode worthwhile still, right? Like, mm-hmm. so, I mean, Blanche obviously is still, and you can tell, is still happy to see her, but just does not know how to deal with it. Mm. And Sophia is like a nonstop fat joke factory. It's a little upsetting.
Yeah.
However, the episode ends up really redeeming itself because she ends up bringing over this boyfriend, who she later reveals is a fiancé. Who is the biggest piece of shit garbage.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so obviously emotionally abusive.
Unrepentant. Yeah.
And everybody is shocked. And the story becomes about Blanche figuring out what she can do because she doesn't want to lose her daughter again. She doesn't want to interfere too much, but she also wants her to be happy. And of course, it ends up she has sort of another sugar baker moment where she tells her that she can and this guy's a piece of shit and whatever. Her daughter storms out, but then comes back and realizes that she can do better, and it's just lovely.
Yeah.
So it's a mixed bag of an episode, but with a really important thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
And speaking of Sophia, though, she does have, before the daughter arrives, though, I wrote down like one good quip that my character, Sophia, did. And I loved that before realizing that, you know, her daughter has gained weight, she describes her as being so beautiful that they're basically like Siamese twins. And Sophia rejoins with, "It's a shame when they separated you. You got both butts." And I laughed so hard I had to write it down.
The only other one I want to mention is someone we've already talked about, which is Scared Straight, an episode where Blanche's brother comes to visit and she wants to set him up with woman after woman. He runs into Rose in a park. And
again, Rose being wonderful with
yes,
the gays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, well, you should just tell your sister because they're like rating people who are walking by and they end up both being like, "Ooh, look at him." And Rose goes, oh, but you're both men. And it's just delightful Betty White goodness. Mm-hmm. And she convinces him that he should go home and tell Blanche. So they go back to the house and Blanche wants to know why it is that nothing has happened. And finally, he just blurts out, "Well, I met Rose in the park, and we went to bed together." And you see Rose just go, "What?" Like, it just takes a second. She does a quick comprehend. But eventually, of course, she's so supportive and generous, and Blanche is a real dick to Rose. But Rose is incredibly supportive and generous, and eventually they have this conversation, and Blanche has to start to come to terms with the fact that her brother is gay, and it's lovely. I'm a big Blanche Devereaux fan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's one more that we wanted to talk
we
about, which
talk
is an
about.
Everybody moment.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's from lovely. The season one finale, mm-hmm. The Way We Met. It's the origin story episode. It's delicious. Mm-hmm. It's so weird. And the grocery store is so weird.
The grocery store scene is so bizarre.
Yeah. It's really strange. But it's a great episode all the way through. But then it ends with, and here's my little anecdote.
Mm.
I'm watching this with my person who's not a sitcom person and did not really watch The Golden Girls when it was on. And he's watching and they do the whole thing at the grocery store. They come home and they're all mad at each other and they go into the kitchen and he goes, "Oh, it's going to be cheesecake." I was like, "Yeah, I think it's going to be cheesecake." And they
and
have,
it is, in fact, it's the first cheesecake
it's
moment.
It's the very first cheesecake. And they have this conversation that they end up discovering they could be friends, and it is all predicated on Rose telling a story about the Great Herring War.
Oh my God.
It's such a beautiful sitcom moment because it blurs the line between when the characters are supposed to be tickled by the story and you can tell that the actresses are also breaking.
You really can't separate the way that Blanche and Dorothy are reacting
They're
to
like
this
hiding their
story
faces.
Versus the way like or is it Rue McClanahan and Bea Arthur reacting to this story?
Yeah.
And it's just like threaded in both.
It's so
and I would just like to point out, since I'm representing Rose, that if it wasn't for that moment in that story and the character Rose, they would not be living together. Yeah. We wouldn't even have a show. So
that's in canon argument. I like it.
Here's another in canon argument. The episode where Rose moves out, they're like, it's not the same. We need Rose back.
This is the episode where Rose basically has like she develops FOMO or something, right? Like she,
yes. He had that term.
She
in the
has
80s.
A, she has like a medical
a
scare,
medical
right?
condition, yeah. And the technical term for the medical scare she has is FOMO.
FOMO. Yes, she was
because
diagnosed.
She thinks she dies and goes to heaven. Uh-huh. So now she wants. So she becomes
she
a
wants
beach
to, like, make
person.
The most of every moment.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So she's living with these roommates who just do not want to hear her stories, and it's very cute. But the second that Rose moves out, Blanche and Dorothy are both like, "This is going to be fine," and then they're like, "Oh, this is not fine.
Yeah.
We need Rose back." So that's another argument.
Exactly.
For Rose.
If we're going on like continuity things too, I was wondering in that flashback episode, where the hell is Coco? The gay
R.I.P.
Coco, who was only in the pilot, and then they realized, oh, Estelle Getty's funnier and fits with the group more. We'll just replace him with her, which I thought was funny. R.I.P. Coco.
Before we take another vote, because I think we all made very spirited arguments. Uh-huh. Are there any, like, we already talked a little bit about Stan. Hey, it's me, Stan. Are there any other supporting, not much in the way of recurring characters, but supporting characters that you're really into? We already talked about that bitch, Barbara Thorndyke, played by Bonnie Bartlett, who won a couple of Emmys for Saint Elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
What about Miles?
Yeah, Rose's mm-hmm. boyfriend Miles, Rose's played boyfriend by Harold Miles. Gould, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, and also has arguably one of the strangest storylines ever, where he is part of the witness protection program and wants her to run away. It's very strange.
That was odd.
But he was a pretty serious character for a long time on that show, and I think actually moved on to what's the name of the show once B. Arthur left?
The Golden Palace.
The Golden Palace. Yeah. Thank you. I think he was actually part of that show as well.
Yeah, he was kind of one of the few sort of love interests that like had an arc, multi-episode. Yeah,
yeah.
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 And then there wasn't there, I know for a hot second, because there was a spinoff, Empty Nest, but it was ostensibly based on two characters that didn't end up making it into the spinoff. There was like a season 3 episode with like Paul Dooley and Rita Moreno.
Yeah,
as like
it was a
two of their
pilot,
neighbor,
and then they
but,
totally retooled the show.
Yeah, they were just like, but we like the Empty Nest idea, but these characters aren't working. So they had, what was his name? Something Mulligan. But then he ended up showing back up. Like after that show went on, he would make appearances on Golden Girls, the Empty
well,
Nest character.
They're actually, if you want to get real nerdy about it.
We do.
Saturday nights on NBC at a certain point, there were at least 3, maybe 4 sitcoms that all took place in Miami that all crossed over that because there was Golden Girls, Empty Nest, and Nurses.
Yeah.
And I distinctly remember an event, a one-night event where a hurricane hit Miami.
A DCCW level crossover.
Yes, yeah. It was a hurricane and all 3 of the shows crossed over on the same night and I was like 12 years old and like glued to my TV on a Saturday night watching this happen.
Well, and Estelle Getty ended up joining Empty Nest, I think, in the final seasons or something like that.
Did she?
Yeah.
Really?
Did you know that Batwoman is going to be in the CW DC crossover that's going to be
that one.
Well,
apparently she's going to get her own series too.
Good.
It was cool. Right. Just don't screw it up.
Yeah.
Right. I am a big fan of the episode where the police department has to set up in their home, and one of the cops is a handsome old guy, and the other cop is George Clooney.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that? And Rue McClanahan, somehow Blanche doesn't hit on him. She just goes full motherly, which is the single most out of character thing that happens in all of the Golden Girls, because there's no way that Blanche Devereaux doesn't try to
would not
hit that.
Thirst for George Clooney. Speaking of celebrity cameos, Valentine's Day had that wonderful Julio Iglesias running gag.
They had that was so Sophia quite often because she also went on that date with Burt Reynolds at one time.
Oh,
and
right.
Well, that's the show where that was the episode where, wasn't it, where the other 3 end up in jail.
Because
they're mistaken for prostitutes.
That's right. Yeah. Which is another great scene.
Because they're all trying to go to the Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater, which was a real thing Florida.
Crazy.
There's also the episode where Sophia dates Mickey Rooney, who convinces her that he was in the mob.
Oh, that's right. He has a suitcase full of money, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and he tells her he robbed a bank.
Yeah.
It's latter day Mickey Rooney. Although he lived for like 15 years after that.
Well, there's also the episode where Dorothy dates Dick Van Dyke, who is a lawyer who decides he wants to become a circus clown.
I don't remember that at all.
I don't think I missed that one.
See, I just rewatched
it. Well, awesome. We have more to catch up on. Because another thing, like, just in case you don't know, listeners, all of Golden Girls is available on Hulu.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hulu acquired exclusive. Hulu is like killing it on that streaming series, picking up old rights, because they also have all of ER. So, man, you could get so much George Clooney. You could get, because I think he ended up doing two episodes of Golden Girls. Is that right? And they was just different characters both times.
I don't remember.
Am I wrong about that?
Surprise me.
He did a lot of guest acting back in the day. Uh-huh. And then obviously on ER. So
who was he on ER?
You're hilarious.
I am.
So let's do one more around the table. Clint.
Gun to my head, I still have to say Rose.
Josh.
Absolutely Rose Nyland. Thank you very much.
You know, I came here for Dorothy, but I knew in my heart that Rose was going to win.
Mm-hmm. As they say in St. Olaf, Hergen, Flergen, Durgen, Schnergen, Turgen, Lurgen, Furfen, Pfeffer. Which translates to, I think it has to be Rose. However, I can't wait until 15 years from now when we've run out of TV shows to talk about and we elect our second character in the Hall of
Faces. We're all retired and living in Miami together.
You guys will come back. We'll go out on the lanai and we'll do Dorothy and Sophia and Blanche and Stan.
Justice for Stan.
And see who gets elected. Amazing. Well, congratulations, Betty White / Rose Nyland. That's a worthy election. Now I just want to imagine all those characters hanging. Well, not Kilgrave. Kilgrave's not hanging out. He's somewhere else. There's a different section for villains. But I just want to imagine Betty White and Ted Danson.
Oh, yeah.
Hanging out. And looking really suspiciously at the Americans. Oh, and Martha would be hanging out with them too. Yeah. It would just be the Jennings would be like, they seem too nice. That's not normal.
Yeah.
They're hiding something.
Oh, no, I feel like Betty would be the one to crack the code with the Jennings by just telling a long enough St. Olaf story. They'd be like, fine, we're Russian spies.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's absolutely what would happen. Or she would walk in on them doing spy stuff and she'd say like, oh, we used to play this game in St. Olaf, right? Okay, moving on to our final act.
Yes.
What are you excited about in next week's TV world, Mr. Clint Worthington?
The entirety of Shark Week. This week is Shark Week. I couldn't pick just one. Just an entire week of fantastic wonderfulness. Watching a whole bunch of stuff. And by the way, my other podcast, Alka Hollywood, is doing a Shark Week special wherein we're talking about and making a cocktail for the sci-fi original movie. Or it just feels like a sci-fi original movie. Shark Attack 3 Megalodon, starring John Barrowman.
Oh.
It's that one. You may have seen clips of it on YouTube.
Is Sharknado 843 starring Alaska going to be happening this week as well?
I don't know.
Because I know that she's in this latest
show. She
is.
Interesting.
I feel the need to, in case people missed this, part of the news that broke at SDCC this weekend is that after this final Sharknado movie, the Sharknado universe is continuing with a stage play.
Oh.
That's been in development for quite a while.
How do you do this?
They're saying that it's going to be immersive.
Oh my god, I hope it's in water. I don't have to go in a swimsuit.
You're taking it in like a scuba gear.
Ian Ziering is swimming underneath the water, just yanking on your legs. That's what I want. Oh, woo! Okay.
It's like 4D, like those little like nature short films you watch at museums. With like the water spray.
Whatever it is, I'm into it.
Yeah.
Chris, what is your pick for next week's TV?
I'm looking forward to the season 5 finale of Drunk History, which is it's going to be a Halloween themed episode, oddly enough. But the guest stars that they've confirmed include Seth Rogen and Alison Tolman from Fargo.
Nice.
This is such a simple concept, this show, but it's so well executed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been a huge fan since the Funny Or Die days. Like, I was so excited it came to series, and it's been great ever since.
Yeah, and one of the things I really love about it is that they're actually surprisingly, like, strict about getting the history right. Mm-hmm. Like
the Stonewall stuff, they cast trans actors to play the trans characters. There was one about the Disability Rights Act or whatever in the 60s and 70s, and all those characters were disabled. All those actors were disabled. And so there's like a real hit of accuracy in amongst the deliberately chintzy production design and everything else. And it's just, I love it so much.
Yeah. Really, really seriously, good pick.
Yeah.
Josh, what is your pick for next week?
Well, again, in full Rose Nyland, I have no idea what's happening in television right now because I'm so busy, but I am going to be taking next week, hopefully, and getting caught up on Pose, which we've already talked about, which I've heard is incredible.
Pose Nyland.
Pose Nyland. No, I've only done about 4 episodes, so I'm looking forward to the rest.
Oh, God. Well, it's even better. I mean, episode 4 is where I went, oh, shit.
Well, Billy the fever Porter. Is.
Right. Yeah. He's so good.
National treasure.
But you'll love number 6. Like,
it just goes on and on. There's a Josh. Josh is not a crier. Josh doesn't cry. He feels, but he doesn't cry. But it might.
Thank you for that.
It's true.
At least you feel.
It's just like I've watched Josh feel a lot of feelings, and I've never seen the man cry. It's just a fact.
I don't.
It's like one of our professors in college didn't have tear ducts. What was the deal?
Who are you talking about?
Joan? No, you don't remember this?
She just blinks a lot.
But she didn't have tear ducts?
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe you don't have tear ducts. Regardless, even somebody with no tear ducts, there's a scene there's a cabaret. I'll just say there's a cabaret. And the first song will make you not cry. And the second one will definitely make you not cry. The second it started playing, I just went... It was like 11 o'clock in the morning. I was catching up. And my person sticks his head out of the little office that we have in our apartment and was like, are you woke? Oh, it's Pose. Okay. And then he just goes back.
I'm saying no more.
God, it's so good. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, we'll break that hard candy shell around your heart with episode 6 of Pose.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
It's just really good. My pick is the next episode of Sharp Objects, the one that'll be upcoming when you're listening to it, Time Travel. It is called Ripe, and it features one of my all-time favorite line readings in anything ever, which involves Patricia Clarkson saying the word ripe. Sharp Objects is just really good. It's really good.
Good.
Amazing, and everybody should watch it. But yeah, Patricia Clarkson, Ripe.
Ripe. I love it.
It's great. I can't wait for you all to hear it. We'll have to do a mini episode just after you've all heard Patricia Clarkson say Ripe. And we'll reconvene.
our Ripe episode.
And that is going to be it for us. Before we get into our official final speech, do either of you have anything you want to plug, or do you want to tell people they can find you on the internet if that's a thing that you want them to do? And it's fine if you don't, Josh?
No, I don't. I don't really have anything to plug other than come to the Little Mermaid Redacted if you got a chance.
It's going to be so fun. Tonight. Chris, what about you? Where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Chris Vire. It's a good way to keep up with all the things I hope to be running soon.
Yay. Amazing. You can find me on Twitter at Allison Hsu. You can also hear me on the podcasts Podlander Drunkcast and Outlander Podcast, which is exactly what it sounds like. And hopefully, now that we're coming up on it, debating Doctor Who. I just don't know when we're relaunching that yet. However, if you're in Chicago and you want to come to Wizard World Chicago, you can use the code Podlander to get 20% off your Wizard World tickets. And then you can see me and friend of the show, Julie Starbird, get kind of drunk and talk about the physical attributes of handsome Scottish men in public.
It's a good time.
Clint, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Alcohollywood, where, full disclosure, I'm currently freaking out over like one tweet going surprisingly viral, which I'm weirdly weirded out about. But I'm also a senior writer for Consequence of Sound. You can find my writing at consequenceofsound.net. I'm also the co-host of the podcast Alcohollywood, which you can find at alcohollywood.com, and Nathan Rabin's Happycast, which you can find at nathanrabin.com.
One last note. Next week, I don't know who's going to be on this episode. Yeah. One of those people would be me, but I will be in California at the Television Critics Association press tour if you want to follow along with all of the hot steaming TV news that's going to come out this week. You'll want to look for the hashtag TCA18. I'll be there and tweeting about it, and then we'll be at the TCA Awards, which I am very excited about. Mm-hmm. You can find our podcast on facebook.com/TV Party Pod. You can find us on Twitter at TV Party COS. You can send us an email to ask us a question or say how dare you wrong Dorothy Sporneck in this way by emailing tvparty@consequenceofsound.net.
Leave us a review on iTunes, Podchaser, whatever your podcast platform may be. TV Party is a production of the Consequence Podcast Network. Check out our expanding roster of music, film, and television podcast programming at consequenceofsound.net.
This show is recorded and produced in Chicago, Illinois, and recorded and engineered by Sophia Petrillo Defender and lover of good marinara sauce, Clint Worthington.
You're a pal and a confidant.
Thanks to Chris and Josh for being here. Oh, I forgot the thing I was going to say.
Oh, what?
I realized that I'm extremely tired and I had to write about Mamma Mia 2 a lot this week. You can take the cast of the Golden Girls and shove them into the Mamma Mia verse, and it works. And in that case, Sophia Petrillo is Cher, which is amazing. And then you have to tweak it a little, because if we're being real, Rose Nyland is obviously the Donna of Donna and the Dynamos, right? Free spirit, comfy overalls, wholesomeness in general, appealing bashfulness about one's sex life. But has a lot of sex. We never even talked about the fact that, Rose had sex fucking twice a day, every day of her entire marriage, except for that one time that they didn't have sex.
In St. Olaf, there's only so much.
And until 12 on Sundays.
That just sounds like a lot of work.
It really does. I'd be so tired. So Rose would be Donna. And then you've got Blanche and Dorothy. And obviously, Blanche is Christine Baranski, sorry, completely blank. I just thought goddess, and then like couldn't remember the actual name.
Fill in the blanks.
And then Dorothy is Julie Walters, and she's even got the red, and it's and the whole thing. And then you can just you get to imagine Blanche and Dorothy singing fucking Dancing Queen to cheer Rose up, and like, don't you just want that in your life?
Yeah, but who's Pierce? Who's Pierce Brosnan?
Oh. I don't know. One of Rose's boyfriends.
I guess so.
Just pick one.
Yeah. It's George Clooney.
Yeah, George Clooney. Yeah. Absolutely. Anyway, thank you. Thank you to Chris and Josh for being here. Thanks to you for listening. And thanks to the Golden Girls for being 7 fucking seasons of amazing TV that has mostly stood the test of time. Watch on Hulu and then like tell them that you told us to and give us money. Bye!
And thank you for being here.
Oh, gross. It where you lead. I will follow anywhere that you take me. Whoops.
Consequence Podcast Network.